Welcome to the place where all the passes are against the grain. This is News 24's daily dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast, The Inside Pass. I'm Simnigu Atlabanisa. Today I'll be joined by our boots on the ground, although with a 12-day gap between now and the Springboks' next match, he's probably going to put his feet up, or we all live in hope. A hearty welcome for News 24 senior sports writer Khanyiso Chwaku. Chwaks, how's it going? Ah, I see we haven't quite got him on the line as yet. Trucks, how are you doing? Are you finally with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you crystal clear. How are you doing, man? You good?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
It's all good. Late night, Springbok night, all the writing afterwards. I think you know what I mean.
Well, it is what it is.
Listen, let's talk about it. You know, obviously with the massive gap between the Boxers' proposed next match, I have to say proposed because there's still a chance, however little, that the Box might not make it to the quarterfinals. This scheduling where you can finish your group games and then you have to sit and wait for another whole week for the rest of the teams to catch up to you. Where does it originate from, and frankly, how's it likely to affect teams? You know, I talk about us being in a position to basically look after, you know, to look after the result because of what happened yesterday against Tonga. But you know, if you look at Australia, the chances are, in all likelihood, they actually not going to. In all likelihood, they're probably not going to make it, and yet they'll also have to sit around for a week. What's the thinking behind it? And I mean, it's got to be one of the worst sort of the thought out schedules.
One would think that it has player welfare involved, because one would think that World Rugby wouldn't want players actually playing through an entire tournament for weeks, then go through and play a quarterfinal. However, though, the timings are pretty weird because, I mean, Scotland, they played their first game, then had their week off, and then were able to see what the lay of the group land was after they lost South Africa. I mean, now the same actually happened to Ireland, who now had the lay of what the group work was, maybe beating South Africa. But I did put in an inquiry with an SA rugby person, and they did say that it was a decision that was made by SA, by World Rugby. They didn't have a say in it. So effectively, they had to now work with what they've given. I mean, I think Jacques Nabe, Springbok coach, did say that they were more than happy to get their four games out of the way and then have a bye week. Pretty much accustomed to from the Super Rugby days, where you play four or five games on the bounce, and then you have a bye week, and then you play another four or five, and then have another bye week. So at least you establish some sort of momentum. But yes, look, it is pretty weird in that now South Africa now need to sit on tenterhook and hope that, well, as things stand, they look good enough to qualify for the quarterfinals. But on the other hand, they'll also be very dependent on what will transpire in Paris this coming Saturday.
Yeah, listen. You talk about player safety. I imagine player mental health can't be, it's got to be linked to that. I'm just looking at sitting around and waiting for that game, and then that game finishes, and it's like, oh, actually, we got to pack our bags and leave. That's a story for another day. But just speaking of player safety, what is the latest on Makazole Mapimpi's cheekbone? Because obviously, as we all saw, he had that massive collision with Gus Pulu in the game against Tonga. But then what happened next was, obviously, he didn't pass the HIA, and there's now talk that he may well have a fracture there. What have you heard, and what's the talk around that?
Not the long and short of it, Springbok, SA Rugby Director of Rugby, Rassi Rasmus, did confirm that Mapimpi's out for the tournament. He suffered a blowout fracture and a fractured cheek, blow fracture of his cheekbone and a fractured eye socket that has rolled him out to 4 to 6 weeks. So that's the tournament for him. Erasmus was pretty coy in explaining who will replace him. He said that they need to I first notified World Rugby. But I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted Lukanyo Arm. Lukanyo Arm did go through his fitness protocols after injuring his knee against Argentina on the 5th of August. Also, I need to look at it this way, that Arm actually did have some proper match time before he got injured. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's called up. Whether he'll actually walk into the team and play is a different story, because when you look now, he hasn't played rugby since the 5th of August, so that's a month, and they were actually chasing about 2 months since he was on the field. So whether he plays or not will be interesting to see. But I would not, most probably he would be fresh off the boat. Maybe there could have been a school of thought for a Joseph Dueba, but I think with how well Dion Fury played in winning the match and the man of the match in Sunday's win against Kong, I suspect that would kind of put that indicate that particular theory of a Joseph Dueba joining the Springboks. But it is there is a potential quarterfinal where you may need your specialist to nail the basics. But I don't expect a rabbit to be pulled out of the hat in terms of a replacement.
Jeez, Trux, I can't believe you saying that, having been with these guys for the last several weeks. If these guys have done anything with any decision they've had to make, it's pull out a rabbit from the hat, dude. Every single team announcement, I've literally now resorted to not trying to second guess what they're going to go with. I just get a box of popcorn and just basically sit and wait to see what new thing that these guys are going to try and surprise us with. So I'm very impressed that you're putting yourself out there and saying, yeah,
it's a very pertinent point that you make. It's a very pertinent point that you make, because I think what Rusty and Jacques have done have created a lot of box office theater in terms of, one, how they pick teams, two, the decisions they make. Because, I mean, even amongst the French journalists, they were very surprised when Pollard came in and replaced Malcolm Marx. They would have thought that the hooker's injury replaced him with the hooker. And that topic refused to die. It only really died once, actually, Pollard, when they came in. A lot of the French journalists were, I think, mildly surprised. Is putting it lightly. I think they would have expected those are the things would have expected to happen. In the Bernard Laporte era, but clearly they were very amused, but also a surprise by that kind of decision making that was reached by Jacques and Rusty.
Let's go back to your thoughts on who should replace Umakazole, simply because the reason I'm asking is, where do you think we need reinforcement? And I'm obviously saying that having watched, having watched two guys sort of, one sort of relearn, to play hooker, almost like, riding a bicycle all over again in Dion Free, and obviously the other guy sitting, other guy basically learning on the hop at international level. Where would you say, in terms of just looking at the box squad, this, what would you say we need? Do we need a hooker, or do we need an in terms of this, this team?
One would want to have a look at your back, simply because it just offers so much more than what a Jesse Creel does at outside center. I mean, Jesse Creel hasn't done anything outlandish out towards that would point the fingers for him being dropped. But also, on the other hand, Bukayo's soft skills were badly missed. In the Ireland game in particular, where one felt that where Mani did all he could to create spark in the back line along with a Damien Willemse. One felt that there was a bit of too much of a likeness in midfield, where the physical gift of Damien D'Allen, which was very potent in the game, would have been better offset with the soft skill of a Lukanyo Arm rather than an equal physical force outside of him in Jesse Creel. But also, on the other hand, you look at the need of a specialist, and Diofori didn't put much of a foot wrong in the Tonga game on Sunday. But also, on the other hand, one also then tends to worry about, do you want a Dion Fury throwing in the 75th minute, where the box have a maul, they require to get a penalty or a try to get past either France or New Zealand or Italy, or France or New Zealand, if I can put it that way, in the quarterfinals. Because at the end of the day, you want a specialist doing a specialist job when it truly matters. And I think one of the points raised in the press box is that there was that while the box mold very effectively, they miss a very big presence at the back of the ball to control the ball. And that's probably one of the things that the Bucks will need to get right should they make the quarterfinals, because the mall was reasonably well negated by a very game Tonga pack. And if they're going to play France with a stronger and a more cohesive pack, I mean, the last thing the Bucks want is a line-out in the second half that is not functional if they're chasing the game to the ability to control the mall effectively right at the back. So, I mean, it's one would want Ambeck to actually give the backline even more, I think, even more bite, because I think having an Ambeck at 13 in the quarterfinal, if he's in good enough shape to make it, will also make a 6-2 split work. Because now with Hanre Pollard at 10, with his kicking ability, Mani can, he can ill afford leaving Mani out, because Mani, when he came on yesterday, he actually showed how to actually chase a game where the box looked far more threatening on attack. Yeah. In the second half, well, because in that second half, the last thing you want with the box trailing by 5-6 points is now looking to an individual to help chase a game. And I think Mani is well poised to do that. The one hopes that with the kind of credit that he got for taking baby steps to all the city was Zwanile Sick, as Rassi Rasmus said in the press conference, one hopes that he will be able to build and take on the confidence should the Bucks make the quarterfinals.
Okay. Now tell me something. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've read it right, but well, if I've read the room right, but based on what I could see, you know, between the build up to yesterday and after the game proper, it seems like the attitude has shifted from Mani versus Pollard to Mani and Pollard in terms of, you know, like you know, how they sort of fit in, you know, with the big picture. Am I putting the cart before the horse there? Is that your feeling too?
Look, the selection yesterday was telling in that they need Pollard to kick and control the game from a tactical kicking perspective. But on the other hand, Mani also brought that element. The only element that's missing from Mani's game is actually goal kicking. I think if Mani was actually a goal kicker, I think the Pollard conversation was never even going to take place. So, but also now, the Bucks are also valuing being able to do different things on the field and not being the one-trick show ponies they've been perceived to be in world rugby. I mean, when you speak to the coaches, I mean, Andy Farrell, and Jonathan Sexton spoke highly of Mani's attacking abilities. Gregor Townsend spoke highly of Mani in the box attacking abilities. So they know that Mani at 10 gives the box a different attacking edge as compared to having Pollard there. But they also know now that the end stage of the World Cup, where you may play the most enterprising brand of rugby, but if you are not able to get points on the board, that brand of rugby then rendered null and void. And that is probably what the Springboks are trying to avoid at the moment. Where, I mean, Rassi did say in the press conference earlier this morning that they are playing a brand of rugby that the country has been asking them to play with Mani there. But understandably so, they also need to be in a position where if they are kickable points, they need to take them. And probably that is the devil's advocate that's facing the Springboks now, that they need Mani's attacking instinct, but they also need Pollard's solidity from the tee. And also now, have there been conversations around Pollard going to 12? Understandably so. But if you look at the form that's been displayed by Andre Esterhazen and Damien Allen at 12, especially when you look at how Pollard's defensive gifts have slightly degenerated since 2017 at 12, one realizes that you can't just shift him one out and sacrifice what the Bucks are getting from Andre Esterhazen and Damien Allen at 12.
Now, I mean, it obviously seems like a situation where we're now almost in agreement that you probably need both guys in the 23, which is obviously to make sure that you can sort of approach the match in different ways. You know, you need the control from a kicking game perspective, and then you need the control from an attacking game perspective. How do you go about that? Do you start with the excitement machine, in inverted commas, that is Mani, or do you start, you know, do you build an innings with Pollard like they did yesterday, and then you go, you know, you go pick on Mani to sort of open things up? And then the secondary part of that question is, how does that affect the bench? Because the bench and how the Springboks have A, won the World Cup the last time around, and B, need to defend the World Cup is incredibly important, especially against, say, if we play against France, a team that's likely to play a 6-2 split too.
Look, when you first look at the bench from one hand, you also need to look at the impact of who do you go with from a hooker perspective. Because in an ideal world, the box you want to go 6-2 with Malcolm and Moong interchanging. Yeah. But now, with Dion and Marco not being out and out hookers, there has to be that giveaway now where they need to look at, do we pick these two together? And that then affects the entire makeup of the bench, because do you now sacrifice a lot? And I mean, now it becomes clear that 6-2 has to be the going process for the Bucks, because they need a reserve scrum off on the bench on the one hand, but they also need money on the bench, because they can't, they do need to pull in a playoff game. They can't just go in and expect a game like the All Blacks, where they'll attack All Blacks from the get-go. I mean, in the event of facing France, France has a far more formidable pack, a far more resilient pack, that will ask questions of South Africa. So it's one of those conundrums where the box are very difficult. Jacques and Russ have a very difficult question that they need to answer now, because on a normal day, 5-3 ends this conversation. But now, with the fact that they need to, with not having brought in a specialist hooker, they need to now have cover for a lineup blowout. If let's say Dion Fourie is not finding his jumpers, they still have a Marco van Staden to sort it out on the bench. But do they now sacrifice a lock to do that? Because what the Bucks have done in big games, that they've also wanted to make sure that they have four locks available at all times on the field. Yeah. They did that for Scotland, they did that for Ireland. So they are facing some very big conundrums now when it comes to actually dealing with Max, when it comes to now what the makeup of the bench looks like.
One of the big talking points from last night was the defense. It's one of those strange situations where if you look at that first 15 minutes where Tonga basically threw absolutely everything at the box, but only got 3 points, for it. You sit and you think, well, obviously the defense was a big part of that. But then you also look at, the final analysis basically says, well, hang on, wait, they conceded 3 tries in the game, which is as many as they did in the group stages in 2019, and I think the last time they conceded 3 tries in a match was in 2015. So obviously, it was a big event in terms of letting tries in yesterday. Do you look at the defense and go, hang on, wait, there might be a mild issue there, or it was just that kind of night, as in, the Tongans finally basically found their mojo, which we've all been waiting for them to do? Or do you also look at it and say, if any team wants to learn how to breach this defense, maybe that's what they should be, they should be studying that game a lot more, even though it seemed chaotic?
It's a bit of both, in that with the box chasing points, they were always bound to be slightly more loose at the back. If you look at the 2 tries at the back end that they conceded, where they actually left space out wide, it was from turnover. Whereas the first one was from a penalty where Tonga built an innings, and then, I mean, no one's going to stop Big Ben Tamifuna coming at the end.
I loved Kobus Reinach trying. I loved Kobus Reinach trying, but it was just like so futile.
Jaden Hendricks got steamrolled in the way when Big Ben came around the corner in the lineout. The question was raised twice this week, actually, at the press conference yesterday, where should they be concerned? It is that sometimes teams do score tries that actually render your defensive system null and void. Where the box has this outside in system where every so often, they seem to be caught short on the outside. I mean, there was a case in McKenzie's try where the box were caught short on the outside, but what they did do was to scramble. I think sometimes the scramble does get caught slightly short when teams are able to draw the box in from one side of the field, then quickly move the ball out. While it happened with the McKenzie try, it happened with one of the Tongan tries today. I mean, that third try, which effectively from Patrick Pellegrini was the box trying to over, understandably so, trying to over elaborate in terms of opening up the Tongan defense and ended up conceding. So Jacques did say that they were not quite happy with the defensive performance and conceding three tries. But also, on the other hand, teams will create opportunities that do render the defense null and void. But I think also that is something that they will hopefully want to rectify, because the last thing you want to concede in a playoff game is three tries. It was three tries and 15 points, converted is 21. And then the box has shown since the British and Irish Lions series that chasing a game isn't their strength. So, I mean, what they did do very well, I mean, that 8 minute, in that 7 minute period where Tonga camped in their 22 and did not come back with a try, effectively that's when the game was won. Because I think if Tonga had scored at that point in time, I think it would have changed the complex of the game. The box would have won, but it would have changed how the box actually played the game. Because as soon as the box got out of their half, they immediately scored. With the Vincent Koch knocked it on, if the ball came off his shoulder and came off his head, it's a different story. But they turned that defensive pressure into points, because as soon as they got out of that sticky situation, they then went and scored, which is effectively a class of the difference between Tier 2 and Tier 1 teams. But why would you feel that in a game like France, in a game like New Zealand, in the quarterfinal, they may not come off as lucky?
Yeah. Now, tell me something. I know especially a guy like me, I keep going on about, geez, you have no idea what kind of team these guys are going to name every time they announce a team for one of their fixtures. But if anything has been sort of reasonably made clear, it's when you look at the starting lineups for Scotland and Ireland, which were the designated big games in the pool stages. There's quite a lot of similarity there, which I think was basically broken. You know, I think there was only two changes in the team that played against Ireland from the one that played against Scotland, that started against Scotland, which was obviously an injury enforced one at hooker, and then the second and the second one was, I think, Dwayne missing out for Jasper. When you look at that team, do you look at yesterday's performance and say, maybe I picked up a few people that kind of like put up their hands to be, you know, to be considered in terms of the quarterfinal match, if the quarterfinal match eventuates as, you know, we think it will?
Yes, indeed. I think with the week's break, so bodies will heal, first and foremost. And I think, secondly, a change that I do expect is at number 8. I think we cannot afford to leave Vermeulen on the bench or out of the match day 23 altogether. Is a critical component of the box breakdown battle. I think that's probably the one place where he was a daily miss against Ireland. So I think one change that would be made is Dwayne starting at number 8. I think where a player who's now in risk of missing out because of the money Pollard is one Vin Leroux. He scored yesterday, but did he have the greatest of games? One doesn't think so. And I think also, you'd raise this in a column, but I think it became a conversation even in the press box today, where does Billy know when to stop talking to referees? Do you want a player like Billy to be having a constant chit-chat with match officials in a game, in a high-pressure game where referees will be under pressure? Do you want a Billy, a defensive liability in particular, having to deal with some of those big French backs, a Damien Penno running at him, a Jonathan Dante running at him, should South Africa play France? One doesn't think so. So, look, I think the coaching staff will have a very fair idea of what the starting 15 looks like. I think most probably the composition of the bench will be different. I think Mapipi's injury may lead to coming back. Will that change the composition of the midfield combination? We're not quite sure, because again, I don't think Lukanya Abu will walk into a team on the back of having not played a test match rugby for 2 months or any rugby of that sort for 2 months, despite working his way back to fitness at the shop. But again, do the box also risk playing Damien D. Allen at 13 and Andre Esterhazy at 12? Because I mean, Andre Esterhazy has asked some very uncomfortable selection questions. Do you trust Damien, who the last time played 30, didn't have the greatest of outings against Rico Ioane, but you also realize that Damien is the better rugby player between him and Jesse, and was probably would adjust slightly better to 13 Could a risk be taken over Kenneth Moody in the quarterfinal? I don't think so. So it's going to be a headache. And again, this guesswork, as you rightly said at the top, is going to be very difficult. But look, I mean, the pack itself picks itself. I mean, the pack on the bench picks itself. I think where the selection headache really is will lie in the back division.
But Trucks, I was going to ask that about Kanan. You know, if you say you have a potential problem or a problem in inverted commas at 13, and this is obviously for all the Jesse Creel fans out there, because I genuinely don't think he's had a bad World Cup. I think he's had a good World Cup and he's been playing well. But you know, there's an obvious sort of ceiling issue in terms of with ball in hand and going forward, for me anyway. Isn't Kanan maybe just the solution you're looking for? Instead of having to ask yourself if you're going to shoehorn into say a match day 23 situation, when you know the main sort of reason given for why Pollard couldn't walk back into the team was exactly the fact that he hadn't played test rugby in however long. So what I'm trying to say is, isn't a way to cheat solution wise to go with Kanan, who has shown before that the bigger the game, it seems like, you know, the calmer he goes.
No, that's true. That is true. I think what yesterday's game robbed him of was an extended run at 13 against a very good midfielder. One would have thought that if Mapimpi's injury would have happened, I think would have got a fair examination, an even fairer examination of Kanan's ability to stay in against Malachi Fikitoa. But because of Mapimpi's injury, then he had to move to win to accommodate just their 13. So, look, he played well against New Zealand. But that was a non-World Cup game. It's still an All Black game, played very well. And as you rightly say, the bigger the occasion, the better he gets. I think a slight fault in his game is that whenever he's been in space, he hasn't offloaded. And I think it's cost the box some points. It cost the box some points in the Tonga game. I think even yesterday when there were opportunities for him to get the ball out wide, he chose to straighten the line and not pass. I think if he just irons out his decision-making, because he's got all the gifts to play centre, the decision-making may be a slight concern at the moment. But I think at his age, at 20, still young, still learning his trade, at 13, at the highest level, the decision-making may not always be the best. But as you rightly said, probably he solves this equation, because I think it would be a risk playing cold. In the same way that the Box also did not play Hendrik Pollard cold when he got back into the team after Malcolm was injured. So as you, I think, correctly saying that Kanan Moody could and should be the guy starting at 13 to give the Box a bit more creativity going forward for the quarterfinals.
All right, Trucks, thank you so much for your insights. And obviously, thank you for your work that you've done since you've been over there. It's been an incredible work rate. And I genuinely hope that this little sort of breather affords you, you know, the time to put your feet up as well, instead of just turning them out. But thank you so much for your time. I appreciate this.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
That's it from us. Well, we'll see you same place, same time. And the passes, as I said earlier, they all go against the grain. This was the Inside Pass.